So we're watching some anime this week, right?
Yeah, I've just got, similarly to how we did this show about mountain climbing, this one is a little more in-depth than that, but it's a similar situation where it's just very short episodes and it's just a light thing. But I found this show by accident, kind of. I was in the airport and I was just heading from Busan to Jeju Island, and I was just looking at random anime stuff because I was there all afternoon. And I found this show. It's not especially new. It came out in 2017, but I watched some episodes and I was like, man, this is a great show. So let me tell you about it. Basically, it's called Restaurant to Another World. And, you know, the way I've been getting into these shows like Eurocamp that are, you know, just kind of like shows about nothing, kind of, you know, just these calming kind of weird, it's this weird storytelling thing that really only Japan does called iyashike, where it's like this storytelling that is supposed to be kind of free of conflict and it doesn't have a lot of plot, and you just kind of watch it and you just, it's like a nice bowl of chicken soup in show form. This is a show like that because it's just about a guy who owns a restaurant and cooks meals for people, except the trick with this show is they also combine it with the fantasy world thing, which is also famous in Japan, where people wake up in a fantasy world. So this is both things. Basically, one day a week, this guy's restaurant, these portals open up that allow creatures and beings from a fantasy world to come to his restaurant. And that's it. That's the show. It's just like a person from Lord of the Rings world that doesn't have ice cubes and has never heard of ice cream, or certainly never heard of like all this cool Japanese cuisine. Once a week, they can come through the door and just get blown away by our food. And I don't know, it's just so cool because it really makes you appreciate all the stuff that we've got. You're like, oh yeah, sure, a crepe or whatever, fried food, you know, whatever, just the stuff we take for granted. But this whole show, that's all it is. It's just these fantasy people just having their fucking tits blown off by these things. They're just like, I can't believe how delicious everything is. And that's it. That's the show.
All right. Well, let me go get a cup of coffee and let's check it out.
Sure. And I'll tell you a couple little details when you're back, but there's not a ton to say about this.
Okay.
So I guess what's kind of cool about this is that it's the most interesting thing about the production of it is that it's such a groundswell success, where it's written by a guy named Junpei Unizuka. And actually, I don't know if it's a guy or a woman, but I presume a guy. So this person wrote this as a, just as like a novel on the internet, you know, it's just like written word on a website. And then that got popular enough to develop into a light novel, which I think we've talked about those before, like that Super Cub show. That started as a light novel, where light novels, it's like another thing that they have in Japan that we don't quite have here, where it means light novel as in not a heavy read, like a nice light read. So it's kind of like a young adult book, except in Japan, there's no age put on it. It's okay as an adult to read these, you know, but they are going to be not too deep, not too heavy, no big philosophy or anything. And
like Harlequin romances.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
that would be our equivalent to a light novel.
Right. Just if only Harlequin romances were about more varied topics. Yeah, totally. And then from there, the light novel became a full manga, and then the manga became the anime on TV. And I guess maybe a good way to think about this as we watch it is, I guess, just imagine yourself in the same scenario I was in, where I'm in the Busan airport and I got 4 hours to kill and I can't really leave and go anywhere else. You know, I'm between Airbnbs. I just live in the airport for the afternoon. What am I going to kill time with? And man, this show is so perfect for that. It's just the best. Basically, each episode is like two little stories. So I just chopped some of them up. So basically, we are going to watch four of the little stories, but each one is only 10 minutes. So they're very, very quick little watches. So for anyone who's curious which ones we're going to watch, so from episode one, I've got the part where the guy from the restaurant hires a waitress from the fantasy world. The part from episode two about the guy who loves shrimp. the one from episode 5 about the Lion Man, and the one from episode 8 about the cookies. So anyone who knows the show will know what I'm talking about, but but even just the fact, like, the one about the cookies, there's no deeper plot here. There's not going to be any kind of twist. It's literally just about somebody discovering how good cookies taste. Yeah, as far as a nice, take it easy, relaxed show that might make you hungry, man, so good. What a good show. I really enjoyed this crap out of this show.
Okay, well, let's check out foodstuffs.
Because it's so thin and there's so little to say about it, maybe we should actually jump in after each one instead of watching all four. Just jump in and have our quick remarks because, I don't know, why not?
And we might have to go and get some snacks.
Yeah, I for sure might. I haven't eaten in a while. After we're done doing the podcast today, I might head to the old convenience store and get some stuff.
Na-ji-san, uchi wa yoshoku-ya nan da yo na. Nan de buta no kakuni toka dasun da yo?
Man, watching that again, it really is making me realize, like, they hit that idea of, like, the little, like, comforting story. They really hit that hard in so many different ways of, like, well, first off, it's just funny that fantasy worlds, you never really think about it, but they are basically just medieval England or whatever. They suck. There's so much stuff they don't have, you know? Like, it's not only that she's never had all this amazing food, but just taking a shower and having a little squirt bottle full of shampoo and soap, that's, like, mind-blowing, you know? They don't have that stuff. Everyone's just gross.
It's a cute little
and
story.
Just she, like, yeah, and even just like, oh, wow, I get to have a job and I get to have some money. When I go back to my crappy fantasy world, I'll actually have some coins, you know? Yeah, and it's just like, ah, how nice. What a nice little... nice little thing. But yeah, I had to throw that one in because obviously the waitress, she's in all the episodes. So it's like, there's the intro to the waitress. But the other story from that episode, there was that brief shot of the dragon that was like lapping at something. So the other story was this lady who came in and orders beef stew. And then she gets a giant vat of beef stew to take with her. And then she reveals on the other side when she goes back through the door that she's actually a shape-shifting dragon. So she just bought the biggest thing of beef stew she possibly could so she can just lap at it. Because even dragons out there, you know, there's a lot of cool stuff about being a dragon, but you don't get to have beef stew. You don't get nothing.
Well, and you don't usually think of dragons having to eat, but of course they would. I mean, other than that they kill people and eat people. And fire-breathing dragons and all this stuff, but you got to think, oh yeah, they've got to go seek out their sustenance too, just like humans do.
And I like to, I mean, I just like that, I like these shows with no plot, you know, because I really have kind of, more and more as I get older, it's like, not only do I feel like I've seen all the plots before, and it's like, yeah, you know, like, you know, everything's trying to up the ante and make things more... I mean, I think a good example was back when we watched the All Creatures Great and Small, the two versions, how, you know, the old one was just kind of slice of life stuff and the new one has a plot and has conflict and characters. But I'm just kind of like, I just get worn out a bit by, like, why does everything have to be conflict and why does everything have to be a big plot? You know, like, I feel like it's just pulling at my strings and I don't want my strings pulled necessarily. I do just want to watch a nice show. Kill some time at the airport, not have to think too hard about it, and it just feels nice. So, yeah, again, I mean, no other country in the world would cater to such a weird desire that I have to have a show with no conflict and nothing happening, except good old Japan. Japan is all about that stuff.
Well, and when they put so much emphasis on the actual cooking of that breakfast, oh man, it was good. It made you want to go out and buy breakfast.
Yeah, and that's going to be even more so now. Now that we got, you know, the origin story of the waitress, the other episodes are way more about the specific food. But I guess what's also neat is beyond the food, you do get little windows into this fantasy world. Like she taught us about how demons are viewed in that world. And like you do get, you know that on the other side of that door, they're having epic adventures. You know, they're having crazy fantasy world, Lord of the Rings stuff. But we don't have to worry about that. We don't care. This is just the one day of the week where you just come in and have an omelet. <You know? laughs> Like, what a weird idea. It's so great, though. I love it. And I guess I'll tell you now, because it doesn't really matter. The one, like, actual plot thing that happens, it's not till the very end of the season, in the very last episode, they do it because this guy, his grandfather started this restaurant, and his grandfather taught him like how to cook and said, hey, by the way, once a week we close up the shop because these magic doors open, and that's when all the fantasy characters come in and we got to feed them. And he never knew why, but I'll just tell you the little bit that they do explain about that, because it just doesn't matter. But just in case you're curious, it turns out that this guy's grandmother, the wife of his grandfather, she's from this fantasy world. During a big epic fantasy battle, she got zapped by a magic spell that sent her to Japan. So she married this guy, and she figured out how to open the doors to her world, but she doesn't want to open all the way up because it would just be a disaster. You know, either the fantasy people would come into Earth and enslave us with magic, or we'd go into the fantasy world with tanks and guns and stuff and we'd kill them. You know, just nothing good would come of it. So she just opened these little doors, these little subtle ones, once a week. So just occasional little people can come in and, you know, experience the wonders of our food, because they just don't have that stuff. So that's, there you go. There's the secret of the show.
Okay.
But again.
All right. Certainly different, a different idea.
Yeah. Again, too, I was thinking specifically with Lord of the Rings. I mean, you know, I was saying as I get older, I want less and less, you know, I'm just less interested in plot. But even way back when I was a teenager, I think Lord of the Rings is the perfect example, because it's kind of the first big fantasy series and it's so famous. And I remember my other nerdy high school friends just loving Lord of the Rings. And it's their favorite thing. I got halfway through the second book and I was like, I don't understand why I'm supposed to care about this. So yeah, I feel like now, fast forward 30 years, it's like, this is my Lord of the Rings. This is what I always wanted. I just wanted nothing to happen. finally, I found it. All right, so the next bit is episode 2 of the show, and it's the shrimp guy.
All right, I'm checking in now.
Haide. Hainichi Taisho. Okyakusama ga omie desu. Kyaku? Dare da? Taicho o nazashi de tazunete korareta no desu. Gobiza no
sanki. Yeah, so I love that one, because that guy in particular, he's such a fantasy character, you know, he's such a trope, but really not. I mean, that's just how fantasy is written. That is just how they are. But I love that he's right in the middle of just your standard boilerplate, like, oh no, I must alert the people, the terrible attack by the blah, blah, blahs, and oh, my horse couldn't make it, and yada, yada. And then in the middle of all that, they're like, yeah, shut up for a second. Just sit down and eat some shrimp.
And then right. That one. He's so handsome, and he's got an amazing build, and he's blonde and green eyed, and he's a real hero.
And yeah, just the way he talks, even, what is this tartar sauce of which he speaks? Like all this stupid shit. But then at the same time, it is like, yeah, that episode is such a great example of what I was saying before. Of like, it's got, it makes it so clear of like, here's the type of storytelling I don't give a crap about, and here's the type I do care about, which is literally just a guy eating shrimp. And the shrimp reminds him of his hometown, and like, oh my god, and how do they even transport this? Because in our crappy times, or the ice cubes blow his mind that there's ice in the middle of nowhere. And yeah, I don't know. It's just, again, pointless. There's nothing to it, but so delightful. Just like... And it is like, it really does make you realize that how much stuff we take for granted, you know, of like fried shrimp. Yeah, whatever. I guess maybe I'll have that, you know, like, where to this guy, it is the greatest thing he's ever, like, you can't even imagine how great it is.
Well, and they do a beautiful job of describing that food as he's eating it. It's not just that he cuts up a piece of shrimp, dips it in the tartar sauce. They embellish that so much that you're looking at that shrimp saying, oh man, I'd love to have a piece of that right now. God, it looks good.
And I guess one thing with the show, these little particular ones that I picked the ones that are, you know, because the two halves of it, I guess, are who is the person eating the food? What's their story? And what food are they eating? So I mostly picked the ones where the character was more interesting. Like that guy, I just thought he was interesting, or the waitress was interesting. I didn't pick any just because of the food, but there are some foods that it's kind of a shame we're not going to get to, because in particular, there's not a lot of people that eat desserts, But there's like this elf lady who, yeah, she just eats like a parfait, and just, it just, you know, again, just blows her mind. And there's these fairies who, you know, they're really tiny. So a bunch of them come in and they all share one thing, and, you know, they're arguing about, you know, because they have to decide before they come what the one thing is they're going to order. And it's like, do we order, you know, whipped cream or custard? They just have all these fights about which one is the most delicious. And yeah, what a, like, it's, this thing is like, what a stupid show. And also what a genius show, like, so awesome. I guess it kind of makes me think too of, I don't know how much, I just haven't watched as much cooking shows, I guess, since the internet, but back when people just watched cable TV more, you know, I would always put on Yan Can Cook or The Joy of Chocolate or whatever and just watch these cooking shows. So it's kind of like that too. It's just like, yeah, food. Look how good food is.
But it's amazing in these little short vignettes how much they put in there. They put a story in. They've got lots of action. They introduce the food. You get to enjoy the food with your eyes. It's amazing how much they are able to cram into that one little section. None of it is ever boring or dragged out, but yet they get across that message of handsome action, story, little story, and then the food. And it's amazing. Yeah, they do an excellent job.
And it is true that as much as I'm crapping on fantasy stuff, I mean, the reason there's so much fantasy stuff is that it is, you know, fundamentally, it is just kind of interesting and neat. It's just that we've overdone it. We've seen it a million times. So it is kind of neat, too. You get a little taste of somebody's weird fantasy life, but you don't have to, like, dwell on it. Like, if you watched an entire movie about that guy and his attempts to protect his town from the raiders and stuff, like, who cares? But if you only see that for 5 minutes, then yeah, that's interesting enough. Although it is weird too, sometimes it starts to raise questions that they don't really answer. Like one of the scenarios, it's like a neat idea, but it's a guy who gets marooned on an island, but the island has a magic door. So he's on the island for 20 years, you know, total Robinson Crusoe stuff, but every 7 days he gets to go into the restaurant and have an amazing meal throughout those 20 years. But it's just weird that at no point during the 20 years does he ever sit down with the chef or the previous chef before him, the grandfather, and just say like, hey, by the way, these are my circumstances on the other side. I'm trapped on this island. Like, can we look into this? Can I go through a different door when I leave? Can I stay here? Can we do something? But this show never gets that deep, you know? It's just like, nah, he just was stranded on the island for 20 years, but at least he got to eat at the restaurant every week. So it's a little weird sometimes. The thinness sometimes doesn't work.
But sometimes, to really get enjoyment out of something, you don't need to go into depth and have all the answers to everything. Sometimes that's the secret of a successful little story. They're just giving you enough just to give you a taste of it, so that you want to see more. But you don't necessarily have to know the answer or the resolution to everything. You just need that little taste to say, I want more.
Yeah, that's one reason why I told you at the start about what I learned about the origin of the restaurant instead of saving it for the end. Because even though the show only tells you at the end, who cares? You know, I was like, I don't give a crap. I just want to see, I just want to see, see the next cool meal, but you know.
Okay. Yeah, so I want more. I want more. I'm checking into the next little meal. The next little story.
We're going to episode 5 with the Lion Man.
All righty.
Dozo, menu desu.
Katsudon.
Master, achida no okyakusan te katsudon shika tabenai desu ka?
Jisan kara kiita hanasu dakara. So that one kind of cracks me up because, again, it's such a, you know, standard fantasy story. You get, you know, you get trapped inside the arena and you have to fight for your freedom. But he's not, he doesn't care so much about his own freedom, or he's not fighting for his people or anything. He's just kind of like despondent, like, how am I going to make it out of this? But then pork, you know, rice bowls are so tasty. That's what gives him the what he needs to fight in battle in the arena, so he can pay for more food.
They also tied us into a time frame here too. Like when I was first looking at the cook, I said, oh, that's not our cook. But then obviously that was his father generation earlier. And then they tie us into how many wins he had over the years, 20 years of wins or something. I forget another time they said, but see, they're now tying us into not just the present day, but a previous generation. Interesting.
Yeah, there's also, because there is like a larger plot that very glacially slowly comes together. Because again, that's obviously not the point. But watching this again, that elf guy that he fought, he actually shows up later. He's one of the four ancient champions that the guy who runs the restaurant, his grandmother was one of the four ancient champions. So the elf guy, because, you know, elves don't really get older, he's one of them too. So I was like, oh, that's that guy. Like, it all does slowly kind of tie together. That episode too, I think it's just neat with the, because that's our first like non-human person. There's another one similar to that with these lizard men who the doorway opens and they don't know what it is. So they send their strongest fighter through the doorway. And then when he gets on the other side, he finds out it's this restaurant that he can't even speak the language, but he only learns basically just the only things he knows how to say in Japanese are how to order this one delicious meal that he likes and how to order three extras to take to go. And then he comes back through the door. So every week he goes through this door and all of his people think he's going on an epic, dangerous journey. And he always brings back this amazing food. But only he knows that he's actually just going to a nice restaurant and just ordering some to go. So, I mean, that's kind of funny, too, in a weird way.
Now, you had said that this was just a, you know, lightweight. And it is fairly light. But I'm getting the impression just from watching these first three that this is part of a bigger thing. This is not just little separate individual stories. I get the feeling that somehow these are all going to tie into something later on, something bigger.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, and there is a season two of this that I haven't watched yet that I'm sure I'll get to sometime. But yeah, I do get the feeling, though, that like even though there is cohesion to the other world and the characters kind of intertwine and stuff, but I doubt that it'll ever especially matter. You know, like I don't think we're leading to a thing where like the... oh no, the restaurant's in danger. We all have to come together to protect it. I mean, it's possible, but I doubt it. I think too, because I've never read a light novel, you know, I only ever see them once they get, because they're mainly in Japanese, I only ever see them once they become an anime. But I also get the sense that I think light also, it means light also in the sense of, you know, not too many big words and stuff. Like I was saying how it's not necessarily a young adult thing, but it is that as well. It's so hard to like describe because it really is just something we don't quite have of, you know, just something you can read on the train on the way to work. But it's, you know, it's okay if you're a grown up reading it, but it's also for kids too. It's like it's just a light novel.
Yeah, but that's one of the signs of really good writing is if you can work it on a number of levels. Like obviously, yes, you can read that, you can watch this just at one level, and maybe that is all it is. But I'm getting the feeling that there's something more here, deeper, that is eventually going to surface if you, like, you read the book or whatever. It's not just a simple boy meet girls. You know, they have a little bit of conflict, but in the end, you know, they're going to get together. You know, that's the Harlequin romance formula. This, I'm getting, it's that it, there's a little more going on here than that eventually might cohese into something at a little deeper level. It's good. It's very enjoyable.
Well, I guess speaking of that, so the last one that I picked, I did pick because it's about cookies and we haven't done one about desserts yet, so it seems good to end with dessert. But actually, now that you mentioned that, I did pick this last one also because it does deal with the waitress. You know, how obviously she got this cool job in the restaurant, but it's only one day a week. Back in her world, she's still a homeless, ostracized half-demon. So again, yeah, it takes a while like for any plot to develop. So this is episode 8 before we learn anything farther about, you know, what's happening to her on the other side of the door. So I did think it'd be kind of neat to finish off with this because we do get to see a little more of what's going on with her. And there is a lady she's going to meet here who she recognizes, and she's just someone from one of the episodes that we didn't see. So we're supposed to know who this lady is. We just skipped by her.
And that's what I mean. They're reintroducing people that you saw earlier on. So that's when you get the impression that these are not just isolated little stories. They all are going to tie in somehow. Be interesting to find out what the ending of it is.
If there is, yeah. I mean, again, this thing started in like 2013 or something, over 10 years ago. So I don't know. And it's weird too, because there's, you know, the anime and there's the manga and there's the light novel. So in a way, it just kind of keeps restarting over and over. So I have no idea if it ever did get anywhere. But actually, now that you mentioned it too, that dragon that we also kind of passed by, there could possibly be something with the dragons, because the dragon, the red dragon, does like basically threatens anyone who misbehaves. It's like, look, if you mess with this restaurant, I'm going to destroy you and everything you hold dear, because I love beef stew. So that could be a thing too. If things ever did come to a head, it might be involving the dragons. Cause that's the other thing that's neat too. So that, to tie all this crap together. So the elf that we just saw, I was saying that he turns out to be this 300-year-old ancient hero. But when he comes across the dragon in human form, it scares the pants off him, because just by her walking by, he's able to recognize, like, oh my God, that's a dragon. So yeah, it does all kind of lead to a larger thing to some degree.
Itadakimasu.
Oh, Mishagore.
Naremasen yo ne, are. Sore ni, chanto okyakusama no chumon o uketa ka.
So yeah, that one was a little unusual, because I think that's the only time they throw in a little post-credit sequence. They don't make us wait to see. They just show at the end, like, oh yeah. Because I love that I'm sure the restaurant guy, when he said the cookies were expensive, you know, they're those cookies in a tin. Maybe they're $20 if they're from a fancy store. But the people on the other side, they're like, that's basically the equivalent of like, here's $200. I pray only that it's enough to procure more cookies. And yeah, I mean, that's such a perfect, another one just yet again of like, cause we're so spoiled, where it's like those cookies that come in a tin. Yeah, they're nice. They're good and stuff. But then we would maybe argue like, yeah, they're fine, but they're still like, they're not freshly made cookies. Like on the cookie hierarchy, those aren't even our top level cookies. But to these people, oh my Lord, look at this tin. These must be the most precious thing ever. And it makes you think like, yeah, you know, maybe I should be appreciating these cookies a little more.
But it's because of the presentation too, that they're so expensive. Like somebody gave me a lovely can of pistachio nut cookies the other day, and the can is gorgeous. And I bet they were very, very expensive. But in that can, there's not that many cookies. There might have been a dozen possibly, but that's all. But really, a dozen cookies is not all that much for something that probably costs $10 or $12.
Yeah, but it'd be funny if instead of the fancy tin, if they went and bought a bunch of no name, just like the giant bag of cookies, just like, here you go, fantasy people. Actually, now that I look at it right in front of me, I've got, let me show you this. This I just happened to have here. I just have a box left of this. This is, since I'm in South Korea, latte brand pineapple cookies. And I remember when I bought these, because I just got them from the convenience store for like $1.50. And I was like, yeah, you know, these cookies are kind of just mass-produced, dry, kind of lame cookies. They didn't really have that much icing in the middle. And like, that's the perfect example of like, how... like, if you gave this to the fantasy people, they would go on a long internal monologue about, like, the amazing sweetness of the blah, blah, blah.
Well, let me show you this can.
Sure, yeah, we'll compare cookies.
Here you go. Cranberries pistachio cookies in this long, narrow can.
Oh, man, that does sound pretty good.
And they're biscuits, so they're cookies, but, I mean, they're okay, but there might be... I'd say maybe 15 in there, maybe 20. But really, I bet that can cost a bit just because of the presentation of it. It's lovely.
Yeah, I guess that's the weirdness too, of just stuff that's, you know, more intended as a gift. Obviously, you know, if you bought those cookies, just if those were the regular cookies you bought for yourself all the time, that'd be a weird thing to do. But on the other hand, when someone's giving you cookies, yeah, they do have to kind of, I guess, give you the the fancier version for it to seem like a cool gift. But yeah, I guess maybe that's the thing that I like about that show, is it is kind of like, in a weird way, it's like wiping someone's mind, or like, you know, giving food to a baby or something, to someone who's never had this stuff. And then you just are like, oh yeah, you know, that stuff is awful good. Like, why? I'm totally taking all this stuff for granted.
Well, I very much enjoyed that show, and not just for the cooking part, but it has nice little storylines to it. But it does make you, it's like the camping shows that we used to watch, those Japanese camping shows, Eurocamp. It was like things that are so simple, and you just don't even think about them anymore until somebody draws it to your attention. And then you say, man, yeah, like that would be fun to do that. Or that's such a simple way of doing something that I haven't done for years, and kind of makes you want to do it.
Yeah, it's nice that Japan has these genres. And also, I mean, the other side of this, the fantasy world thing, that's actually an enormous genre. That one's called isekai, and it's yeah, like people get hit by a car and wake up in a fantasy world, or they get teleported into a video game, just all these different ways to be in the fantasy world. So in a way, that's kind of useful too. Like, it allows a show like this to exist, that there's all these other shows that delve more into magic versus technology. Like, what's better? We're amazed by their magic, they're amazed by our internet, you know, all that type of stuff. But since there are those shows, this show doesn't have to delve too deep into that. Instead, you know, that can be a backdrop, but this show can just be like, oh my God, cookies and shrimp. I keep thinking of the shrimp guy, the shrimp, fried shrimp. I guess just the fact that it like teleported him back to memories of his youth and all this stuff. Like, that's of all the food that they ate, it's probably my least, like, I think I like the other foods better than fried shrimp. I've never been a big fried shrimp guy, but I don't know, that one just sticks in my mind somehow, of just like, yeah, in a world where they don't even have ice, yeah, like you would only be able to eat shrimp if you live right there by the sea, because there'd be no other way to transport it. And you still wouldn't be eating this breaded golden fried shrimp with tartar sauce and all this stuff. Or I guess it also makes me think of, I was reading a thing once about the history of ice cream. And this is all very obvious stuff, but I just never thought about it. That back in, you know, the ancient England days, that the like fancy pants dukes and earls and stuff, they would dig these underground big rooms and put snow in them, just so that, you know, just for a couple extra weeks, they would have snow and ice to make little like ice cream and crap out of, or whatever their equivalent was back then. But it would only last, you know, an extra 10 days or something. So, and it just kind of blew my mind of like, oh yeah, like for us, that's just literally nothing. You could go buy an ice cream bar from a million stores anywhere right now. But back then, even if you were the king, it doesn't matter. If you want ice cream in the summer, you can't have it. You just can't. There's no way to do that. And this is that idea, just like, yeah, even bigger.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, we just take everything so for granted. But even in up until the last century, I mean, around here, they had big ice rooms where some of them were underground, some of them were above ground, where they would bring ice blocks from the rivers and store them in these rooms, and then cover them up with straw bales, that kind of stuff. And that ice would last until the summer. But that's how they kept their food cold.
Yeah, and didn't we also, specifically, I think in Eastern Canada, this was a thing, because I've seen it in some buildings in Toronto, like milk doors, where the milkman would put the milk in like a little door from the outside, and then you would come get it from your side of the door, but the idea of it being, you know, in the wall was to keep it closer to the outside. So in the cold months, it'll keep your milk a little bit cold. This is like,
well, no, I didn't know that. Now, around here, the milk would just used to get just delivered to your doorstep. The bottles of milk would just be left on the step in the morning, and you'd go and bring it in.
Yeah, one of my friends, one of his apartments in Toronto still had one of those. And I was like, what the heck even is this? And obviously it's not used for that anymore. But yeah, just a little thing that, you know, you just have the milkman put your milk in the milk door.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, as foretold when we started watching this, yeah, I feel like I'm starving now. I feel like I need to go get something to eat.
Yeah, me too. Me too.